Welcome. It's time for another episode of Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell, and we continue to celebrate Native American Heritage Month throughout the month of November. First up, the celebration they can't cancel, Native Heritage Month Lives On, by Kaylee Berg from Native News Online. Each November, Native American Heritage Month is celebrated in the United States. The month provides time to celebrate and honor the histories, cultures, and contributions of American Indian and Alaska Native peoples. The origins of this national observance trace back more than a century. In 1916, New York became the first state to declare an American Indian Day, following years of advocacy by Red Fox James of the Blackfeet Nation, who rode horseback across the country seeking support from state governments. In 1990, President George H.W. Bush signed a joint congressional resolution designating November as National American Indian Heritage Month. Since then, every U.S. president has issued proclamations reaffirming the importance of honoring Native heritage. For November 2024, President Joe Biden declared November as Native American Heritage Month, stating in his proclamation that Indigenous peoples' history in the United States is defined by strength, survival, and a deep commitment to and pride in their heritage, right to self-governance, and way of life. Noticeably absent this year is a proclamation from President Donald Trump, who declared National Hispanic Heritage Month, but has not issued one for Native American Heritage Month. Just days after the start of Trump's second term on January 28, 2025, an internal memorandum from the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA, announced it would no longer observe National American Indian Heritage Month, along with 10 other cultural and historic observations, including Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Juneteenth, and Holocaust Days of Remembrance. DIA will pause all activities and events related to agency special emphasis programs effective immediately and until further notice, the memorandum stated, adding that special observances hosted throughout the year are also paused. During Trump's first term, he declared November not only as Native American Heritage Month, but also as National American History and Founders Month, a separate observation honoring European settlers. Despite the pullback from the Trump administration, Native communities continue to grow. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, about 7.4 million people in the United States identify as American Indian and Alaska Native, either alone or in combination with another race. That number is projected to rise to around 9 million by 2060. The Native population has grown by more than 30% in the past decade, outpacing the national average, and is notably young, with a median age of 33, compared to the national median of 39. There are currently 574 federally recognized tribes in the United States, each with unique languages, governments, and cultural traditions. While many tribal citizens live on their ancestral homeland, roughly 71% now live in urban areas. This migration reflects a long history of relocation policy, but it has also led to growing indigenous visibility in cities where Native people are establishing cultural centers, businesses, and community-led initiatives that strengthen identity and economic opportunity. Native-owned businesses are among the fastest-growing sectors in the country, contributing billions annually to the U.S. economy, from renewable energy ventures and tourism enterprises to fashion and art. Native entrepreneurs are combining traditional knowledge with modern innovation. Still, many challenges persist. Native communities experience disproportionate rates of poverty, health disparities, and environmental injustice. The legacy of boarding schools, land dispossession, and federal assimilation policies continue to affect generations. Yet, throughout Indian country, efforts to reclaim and revitalize Native language, protect sacred sites, and restore food sovereignty are driving powerful movements of healing and resurgence. Across the nation, schools, museums, and tribal organizations host events highlighting Indigenous art, storytelling, and history. Readers can turn to Native authors, such as New York Times best-selling author Angeline Woolley, Sault Ste. Marie Tribe, 23rd U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo, Muscogee Nation, Pulitzer Prize for Fiction winner Louise Erdrich, Turtle Mountain Ojibwe, and Robin Wall Kimmerer, Citizen Band Potawatomi Nation, another New York Times bestseller author whose works illuminate contemporary Indigenous life and the deep relationships between people and the natural world. Native American Heritage Month invites all people, not just those within Indigenous communities, to learn and take part in the story, supporting Native-owned businesses, attending cultural events, and learning about the land one lives on are ways to honor this month's recognition. Up next, here's what young Native Americans funded with $720,000 from Novo Nordisk by James Pollard from Philadelphia Tribune. Armed with hundreds of thousands of dollars from Newman's Own Foundation and Ozempic creator Novo Nordisk, young Native Americans are leading the fight against persistently high rates of food insecurity in tribal communities. In a rare example of agency for a beneficiary community, 21 emerging Indigenous leaders recently crafted selection criteria, evaluated applicants, and picked 24 finalists to split a pool of $720,000. Organized by Native Americans in Philanthropy, the 16 to 24-year-old participants said the inclusive process reflected Indian country values of self-determination and intergenerational relationship building that more donors should embrace. Funders can listen to Native youth to know where they should direct resources, said Native Americans in Philanthropy Program Manager Savannah Baber, 28. The resulting Indigenous Tomorrow Fund was successful enough that organizers want to increase next year's pot to $1 million. Native Americans in Philanthropy, a coalition of grantmakers, tribal leaders, and other advocates for increased philanthropic support of Indigenous organizers, has secured half of that funding. They are still seeking partners to commit the other $500,000. The pilot program was fairly unusual for a grant initiative. Despite shifts toward trust-based philanthropy championed by Mackenzie Scott and others that removes restrictions on how donations can be used, wealthy funders generally dictate the terms of their giving. It's still uncommon for the communities receiving the donations to be so directly involved behind the scenes, let alone handed the reins, almost entirely. And it's especially unusual for young people to receive responsibilities beyond, say, a seat at the table or a purely advisory role. More participatory approaches, however, are gaining popularity across the sector. Center for Effective Philanthropy President Phil Buchanan said there's an increased sensitivity to top-down philanthropy, but his sense is that it's rarer for funders to cede decision-making power to others. There's this recognition that a lot of philanthropic mistakes are made when answers to problems other people are experiencing are cooked up by consultants in conference rooms rather than being informed by those donors who actually seek to help, Buchanan said. The fund's focus on food insecurity therefore made sense to Native Americans in Philanthropy, considering the issue's acute impact in Indigenous communities. Settler colonialism forced them onto unfamiliar reservations and diminished their ability to follow traditional food practices that had sustained generations. While rates have fallen, recent U.S. Department of Agriculture surveys suggest American Indian, Alaska Native households still lack access to adequate food at twice the level of white residents. Child obesity is high, and affordable healthy groceries are even harder to come by in rural food deserts. The $30,000 grant recipients are tackling those issues in a variety of ways. There's a multi-generational collective of Shinnecock women in New York who farm kelp to clean up a bay, or an Arizona-based community center that grows culturally significant crops such as Apache giant squash, distributes fresh produce, and trains youth through hands-on land management. Philanthropy's sparse giving to Native American-led organizations means there's little private money for such efforts. Less than 0.5% of funding from large U.S. foundations goes to Native American nonprofits, according to a 2019 report. Native Americans in Philanthropy had already been working to reverse that trend. The group hosts a Native American grant maker program that teaches indigenous youth and young adults about the philanthropic sector. Newman's own foundation offered to take that learning a step further by giving them a shot at running an entire fund themselves. The funders determine the issues of food sovereignty and health. Because Newman's Own supports child nutrition efforts broadly, Baber said the foundation wanted indigenous youth perspectives on advancing food justice. They brought Novo Nordisk on board with an interest in wellness. Grant makers proceeded independently from there, but that autonomy didn't mean they were entirely on their own. Younger philanthropy professionals, elders, NAP staff, and funders program officers sometimes joined meetings, but their presence only spurred conversation and never dominated conversation, according to the younger participants. Participants said it wasn't their accomplished resumes or community engagement that made them equipped to join the grant-making team. It was something more innate that many titans of philanthropy don't have, the fact that they came directly from Native communities. They were heartened by their peers' interest in reclaiming land stewardship practices and ensuring access for future generations. Newman's Own Foundation Indigenous Communities Officer Jackie Blackbeard said that interest was highlighted by the volume of proposals. This inaugural cycle received more than 400 applications. Up next, Cortez Masto, Mullen introduced bipartisan bill to help tribes apprehend violent criminals, by Native News Online staff. U.S. Senators Catherine Cortez Masto, Democrat, Nevada, and Mark Wayne Mullen, Republican, Oklahoma, have introduced bipartisan legislation that would allow the U.S. Marshals Service, USMS, to assist tribal law enforcement in tracking down violent criminals and searching for missing children. The bill, called the Tribal Warrant Fairness Act, is part of Cortez Masto's ongoing effort to strengthen public safety in Indian Country and address the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous people, MMIP. Tribal communities need more tools to combat violent crime, said Senator Cortez Masto. It is both ridiculous and cruel that tribal law enforcement can't use the U.S. Marshals Service like any other comparable law enforcement agency would to keep their community safe. My bipartisan bill would fix this injustice and help catch violent criminals faster. Senator Mullen emphasized the importance of collaboration between federal and tribal authorities. I am steadfast in my commitment to the safety and security of our tribal communities, he said. The Tribal Warrant Fairness Act is a common-sense solution to fill in the jurisdictional gaps and grant the United States Marshals Service authority to assist where needed with their unique capabilities. Tribal communities experience some of the highest rates of violence in the United States, particularly against women and children. However, tribal law enforcement often faces restrictions that limit their ability to respond effectively. Currently, the USMS can help state and local law enforcement locate and arrest suspects, but lacks the authority to provide the same assistance to tribal agencies. The new legislation would correct this disparity by authorizing the USMS to support tribal law enforcement in the same way it does for other jurisdictions. The Tribal Warrant Fairness Act builds on Cortez Masto's work to implement recommendations from the 2023 Not Invisible Act Commission report, which outlined steps for addressing the MMIP crisis. That report stemmed from her Not Visible Act, a bipartisan measure signed into law in 2020. In addition to this legislation, Cortez Masto has advanced several other initiatives to strengthen tribal public safety, including the Badges for Native Communities Act and the Tribal Access to Electronic Evidence Act. Beyond law enforcement, she has also championed efforts to improve health care, protect voting rights, and ensure tax fairness for tribal nations. This is Native Son on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I am your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Up next, film featuring Tayton Colbert to hit theaters in November by Chickasaw Nation Media. A teen is planning his path to Broadway, building upon past experiences and honing his skills at the Chickasaw Arts Academy. At 15 years old, Tayton Colbert, a Chickasaw citizen, has already worked on major film productions and with a few legends of the silver screen. Following his role of Tonto Boy in Kevin Costner's Horizon, An American Saga, Chapter 1, Tayton was asked to audition for the role of Teddy in Wild Faith Christmas, and he is excited for the movie's release in November. Wild Faith Christmas is one of the biggest roles I've gotten. I was a little hesitant about it because I was worried about how long it would take to make it, since I have a bunch of other stuff going on. But it actually turned out real nice, Tayton said. Filmed in 2024, Wild Faith Christmas is a holiday-themed movie that tells the story of Emmett Murphy, who helps a small local church care for a group of orphans. When a ruthless mine owner tries to force the children into a dangerous situation and kidnaps one of them, Emmett leads a rescue operation and discovers the true spirit of Christmas along the way, according to IMDb.com. In the movie, Tayton plays a pivotal role as an orphan. His character is also taught to sing Christmas carols. Combining music with acting is a dream come to life for Tayton. He plays saxophone and guitar and is a member of the Glen Pool, Oklahoma High School Marching Band. He is teaching himself the drums and bass so he can do some more producing. He also composes his own music. Music is a really big way of how I express my emotions, he said. The journey to film. Tayton started working in film at 6 years old when he was a background actor for the Chickasaw documentary series Winterfire. Encouraged by his great aunt and great uncle, Neva and Tim Harjoji, he also worked on some of the Our History is World History commercials and other advertising campaigns. Tayton got into film because his great aunt and uncle are heavily involved in the film and theater industry and recommended he get into it. Even now, they mentor and recommend roles for him, Heather, a Chickasaw citizen, said. As he grew older, the movie productions got larger. He appeared as a background actor twice on Sterling Harjo's television series Reservation Dogs and on a short film Flint. In the blockbuster Twisters, Tayton and his little sister Lillian ran from a tornado hitting a rodeo. His goals, aspirations, and confidence grew even more after his first experience at Chickasaw Arts Academy in 2024. His older sister, Bella, has been attending the Arts Academy since she was 8 years old and encouraged her younger brother, who suffered from anxiety, to also attend. It was at the Academy that Tayton was introduced to musical theater. That place has some magic to it. I love it so much. One of the biggest parts is that I get to do this with a bunch of friends that I've met during it, especially Bella. If she had not asked me to try it, I probably would not have gone any further. But I'm really glad that she did. This whole musical theater thing, that's what I really want to do in film work, Tayton said. That's his big goal, is to be in a musical film, Heather said. Chickasaw Arts Academy students ages 14 to 18 select a major area of study for the two-week summer academy. Major students can select from disciplines such as painting, metalsmithing, video production, culinary, beadwork, and performing arts. Performing arts is divided into four sections: vocal, dance, traditional theater, and tech theater. Tayton selected traditional theater, and in the 2025 Academy Showcase, The Wizard of Oz, he played Scarecrow alongside his sisters. Bella played Dorothy, and Lillian, 12, played two roles. She was in the Lullaby League and a Jitterbug. Tayton's cousin, Davion Wilson, played the Cowardly Lion. The adaptation of the play incorporated significant Chickasaw themes, language, and values. Heather, who just completed the 2-year Chickasaw Academy Adult Immersion Virtual Program, was overjoyed to hear her children speak the language from the stage. When Tayton played his role, he spoke some Chickasaw language and spoke so naturally. I know my grandma, a fluent speaker, was smiling from heaven. I am doing all I can to continue passing the language on, said Heather. During his first time at the Academy, Tayton played the wolf and Rapunzel's prince in the showcase Into the Woods. These roles included learning a lot of lines and singing a solo. He would not practice in front of his mother, and she was nervous for him before the performance. When the wolf took the stage and began belting out his solo, Heather's heart sank. I thought that they had put somebody else in his role. But no, this was my son. He came out clear and confident. During the last 2 years, Tayton has grown in his stage performance and confidence. I was so grateful to the Chickasaw Nation for allowing our children to explore the different areas of the arts, supporting them, and helping them fine-tune or expand to different areas, said Heather. Horizon to Wild Faith. The producers of Wild Faith Christmas reached out to Tayton and his mother after noticing Tayton's performance in Horizon and requested he audition for the role. He and his mother spent 2 weeks last year filming Wild Faith Christmas in Michigan and had a wonderful experience. Tayton had the best time working with everyone in Michigan. They all treated us like family. We made some great friends and made some great memories, Heather said. Traveling to work on the films is one of Tayton's favorite things. The journey to working on the Utah Horizon set began when Tayton auditioned for a role. A week later after that audition, we got a call. Tayton didn't get the role, but the director loved Tayton and wanted to make sure he was in the film. So he wrote a role and lines for him and wanted to offer him the part, Heather said. Tayton accepted the role, which included learning some Navajo, and spent about a week working in the Red Rock Canyons of Utah with the movie's director and star, Kevin Costner, as well as an academic tutor, a Navajo language teacher, and his mother. Chickasaw proud. Heather said she receives her Chickasaw heritage from both sets of parents. Her maternal grandfather, William Hamilton, was full-blood Chickasaw. Tayton honors and reveres his ancestors for the hardships they endured. I am very proud to be a Chickasaw. I am proud that we survived all the hardships, and we are still here today. Like the language, we are trying hard to keep it going, and we are not going to give up. About Chickasaw Arts Academy. The Chickasaw Arts Academy emphasizes Chickasaw and other Southeastern First American cultures and tribal aesthetics through performing and visual arts. Students must be Chickasaw citizens or dependents of Chickasaw citizens. Next, SNAP recipients to receive only half of November benefits due to shutdown. By Sean Griswold from Native News Online. On Monday, U.S. officials outlined plans to fully utilize $6 billion from a contingency fund to cover partial payments to states for people who receive food aid through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP. Due to the federal government shutdown, SNAP recipients could see at least half of their November benefits, according to a declaration filed Monday in a Rhode Island federal court. However, uncertainty remains about how long it will take those payments to be applied to the food card balances of people across the country. SNAP is typically paid out from state agencies to millions of Americans starting at the beginning of each month. Last week, two federal judges in Rhode Island and Massachusetts ordered officials from the United States Department of Agriculture to spend from the $6 billion fund that is part of the USDA's federal government shutdown contingency plan. The money was approved by Congress in 2024. States, nonprofit groups, and a union said the federal government acted unlawfully when it did not issue SNAP payments on November 1st due to the ongoing shutdown. In October, the federal government used the contingency fund twice, court documents revealed. According to Patrick Penn, Deputy Undersecretary for Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services at the USDA, the agency paid $450 million in administrative costs to SNAP state agencies, $300 million also went to Nutrition Assistance Program block grants for Puerto Rico and America Samoa. The USDA plans to spend an additional $600 million from the contingency fund for the same administrative purpose in November. That leaves $4.65 billion in the contingency fund for direct food aid, the USDA said. Penn stated in court documents that we'll all be obligated to cover 50% of eligible households' current allotment. This means that no funds will remain for new SNAP applicants certified in November. Disaster assistance, or as a cushion against potential catastrophic consequences of shutting down SNAP entirely. The federal government also alerted the court that it will not tap additional emergency funds to cover SNAP losses during the government shutdown in November. Specifically, it rejected using Section 32, Child Nutrition Programs, a fund responsible for millions of school meals, such as the National School Lunch and Breakfast Programs and Summer EBT. Using billions of dollars from child nutrition for SNAP would leave an unprecedented gap in child nutrition funding that Congress has never had to fill with annual appropriations, and the USDA cannot predict what Congress will do under these circumstances, Penn declared. Next, the USDA said it will send states revised calculations on how much the food benefit total will be available for people in November. From there, states are required to alert SNAP recipients about the reduction in benefits. For at least some states, Penn told the court, USDA's understanding is that the system changes states must implement to provide the reduced benefit amount will take anywhere from a few weeks to up to several months. According to the latest report by the USDA, more than 500,000 Native Americans receive SNAP benefits. In breaking news, U.S. Senate reaches a tentative deal to end longest federal shutdown in history, by Levi Rickert. The U.S. Senate reached a bipartisan deal Sunday to end the longest government shutdown in the nation's history, a 40-day standoff that shuttered federal agencies, furloughed hundreds of thousands of workers, halted SNAP benefits for millions, and highly disrupted air traffic throughout the United States. Sunday night's vote was a procedural vote that allows the bill to move forward. The deal came late Sunday after seven Senate Democrats and one independent voted with Republicans in a procedural vote to move the deal forward. Senators Angus King from Maine, John Fetterman from Pennsylvania, Catherine Cortez Masto from Nevada, Jackie Rosen from Nevada, Tim Kaine from Virginia, Dick Durbin from Illinois, Maggie Hassan from New Hampshire, and Jean Shaheen from New Hampshire voted in favor of continuing Resolution CR following the bipartisan deal. The measure now heads to the House of Representatives, where its fate remains uncertain. House Speaker Mike Johnson has not said whether or not the chamber will vote on the Senate package. The House has been in recess for the past 7 weeks, and its members must return to the nation's capital to vote. The agreement would immediately reopen shuttered agencies through a combination of short-term funding bill and three full-year appropriation measures. The stopgap bill would keep the rest of the government operating through late January while lawmakers continue negotiations over long-term spending priorities. Under the plan, federal employees would receive back pay for the weeks they went without paychecks, and departments would be barred from additional layoffs through the end of the year. Essential programs, including food assistance and veteran services, would resume operation within days of the president signing the measure. The deal also postpones the decision on extending health insurance subsidies under the Affordable Care Act. Senators agreed to hold a separate vote on that issue in December. "This shutdown has gone on far too long. It is time to act," said Senator Majority Leader John Thune, who endorsed the plan alongside a bipartisan group that included Senators Jean Shaheen, Maggie Hansen, and Angus King. But Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer from New York criticized the agreement, calling it unacceptable because it fails to guarantee immediate relief for those who lost subsidized health coverage during the shutdown. The shutdown began October 1st after Congress failed to reach a deal to fund the government. About 900,000 federal employees were furloughed and worked without pay and key services, from airport safety inspections to food aid distributions, were disrupted nationwide. If approved by the House and signed by President Donald Trump, the legislation would bring a close to the 40-day impasse and restart the flow of federal funds across agencies. You've been listening to Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I am your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Music is Land Back by Hallucination.